Hello, everybody, and thanks for listening. Welcome back to Podcasting Them Softly. I'm Tim Fugelei, and I'm here with the major domo of Podcasting Them Softly, the one, the only, Frank Mangarelli. Frank, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Tim. Thank you very much.
Awesome. We have a very special guest. This is an old friend of mine from back in my Central Eagle, Omaha high school days. His name's Dan Mervish. He's been on the show once before, so some of our listeners probably remember. He is the co-founder of the Slam Dance Film Festival. He is also one heck of a filmmaker in his own right. And this weekend, he is dropping nationwide his worked on and promoted film, Bernard and Huey, which is based on a kind of a long-lost screenplay written by Jules Pfeiffer, who a lot of you will know is the writer of the famous slash infamous Carnal Knowledge and a few other things. He's done many things, actually, and Dan can tell us a little bit more about that. But Dan, appreciate your coming back to Podcasting Them Softly. Tell me exactly, if you can, how many film festivals you have now attended in promoting this movie.
Well, first of all, guys, thank you for having me back on. Always an honor to be on the show. With Bernard and Huey, we have gone to, it's pretty close to 30 film festivals on five continents, depending on exactly how you count the continents. But, and it's still got a couple left to go. It's been to Sao Paulo and Barbados and Manchester, England, and Guam and Jaipur, India, all kinds of fun places. And then this summer, actually, in about a month, going to a festival in Japan for our Japanese premiere, and also Woods Hole, Massachusetts. It's going to be the opening night film there, which is pretty nice because the film already has distribution, so it's nice to still be getting it to festivals.
Mm-hmm. And you've won top prize at least one of them, the Guam Festival, right?
Yes, exactly. We won the Grand Jury Prize in Guam, and that was a fun time to have a film there. It was right when Kim Jong-un was threatening to blast Guam out of existence.
So, right, so maybe competition wasn't very stiff.
Exactly. Yeah, but it was nice. We through the USO, we actually got like 40 free tickets for U.S. Service members and their families to go to the film because it just happened to coincide with the screen there. We won the Grand Jury Prize there. Jules Pfeiffer won the Best Screenplay Prize at the Manchester Film Festival in England. We won the one of the more interesting ones in Jaipur, India. It won the quote-unquote Best Film from the American Continent. Unquote, singular. So I think they think there's just one continent here, but we'll take it.
Yep.
So so it's been, and a lot of the festivals have played out of competitions, which is great because then you can't lose.
Sure, you know? There you go.
But it's just been, it's just fun to go to all these places with the film and show the film to different audiences around the world.
Mm-hmm. And you've gotten some really good reactions. I know I've now seen it twice and have seen some really positive reactions to it here in Colorado where I'm at. But it seems to be a crowd pleaser and a movie that, a good one for grown-ups, which isn't always the easiest thing to find at the multiplexes these days.
Yeah, exactly. Which is ironic because it is actually based on comic characters or comic strip characters, technically. Bernard and Huey actually.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Sure. Yeah. The characters were created by Jules Pfeiffer, who's an Oscar, Pulitzer, Obie-winning writer and novelist and playwright and illustrator. And he had a long running strip for 44 years in The Village Voice, a comic strip, and it was syndicated all over the world actually, and these characters actually were created in 1957. They appeared as these kind of post collegiate, swingers, swinging beatniks in the East Village or the West Village at the time, and then they kind of kept reoccurring in his comic work, as well as his plays, actually. And then from 82 to 86, he had a recurring six-panel comic in the back of Playboy magazine, which was called Bernard and Huey, and where these characters, who were now middle-aged, were still trying to get laid and being largely unsuccessful. And it was kind of a satire of the people, of the men that were reading Playboy at the time. That was kind of how Pfeiffer saw it. And based on the success of that recurring strip, Showtime commissioned him to write a screenplay. But the week he turned it in, they just happened to change ownership and change their whole model from doing movies to, I don't know, boxing or comedy or something like that. So they never paid him for the script, and they gave it back to him. And then he and a producing partner at the time tried to get it made as a studio feature and just had no luck with it at all. And then they just put it on a shelf for what wound up being 30 years until I came along a couple years ago.
And talk a little bit about your police work, your detective work, as it were, to find the script. How did you know it was out there? And then tell us about what you did to get your hands on it.
Sure. Well, one of the films that Pfeiffer had written in 1971 was called Carnal Knowledge, that Mike Nichols directed and starred Jack Nicholson. And that film was a bit of an influence on my prior movie that I directed, which was called Between Us. And so while I was in post-production on that film, I thought, oh, why don't I wonder what happened to the guy that wrote Carnal Knowledge. And so I just Googled Pfeiffer, found an interview with him in the Chicago Sun-Times or something like that. And lo and behold, it said he's still alive, he's living in the Hamptons, he's teaching, he's writing graphic novels, still writing plays. And at the very end of the article, it said he had several unproduced screenplays. And I thought, well, whatever they are, they're probably good. And so I contacted him, tracked him down. He's out in the Hamptons, and he said, oh, yeah, no, I think I've got some stuff, but I've been divorced a few times. Everything's in storage. I don't know where anything is. Try me back in 4 months. I said, all right, I'll try him back. So I tried him back 4 months later. Yeah, I still don't know where anything is. Try me back another 4 months. And this went on for a year and a half. And finally, a friend of mine, my friend Kevin, said, oh, yeah, I remember reading one of these screenplays in an old magazine from the late 90s called Scenario Magazine that would publish mainly produced but sometimes unproduced screenplays. I said, well, Kevin, do you still have your copies of the magazine? And he goes, no, I'm divorced. They're in storage. I don't know where anything is. So luckily, I realized that the Academy library, which is run by, the Motion Picture Academy, the Oscar people, they had a copy of the magazine. So I went there, found the magazine, read the script, and I thought it was great. It was, it was written in 96 and had some flashbacks to 1960, but I thought, the characters were still these kind of timeless and timely characters in their own ways. And the dialogue was still very funny. So I called Jules, and he said, oh, yeah, that's the one, Bernard and Huey. Because I didn't even know what I was looking for up until I found it. And he said, oh, but I seem to remember my assistant sent them an abridged version. What you read may not have been the final, the full version of the script. I said, well, that's fine. Let's call your old assistant. Maybe she's got a floppy disk or something. Oh, no, she's dead. Oh, my gosh. Well, horrible news. I'm sorry to hear that. I said, but what about your agent? You had a big agent at the time, right? Oh, no, he's dead, too. Oh my gosh, that's horrible. I said, but you must have had a lawyer at the time. Oh no, the lawyer, he's no longer among the counted. He is dead. And so that was three for three there. But luckily his old producing partner, a guy named Michael Brandman in LA, was still alive, still married, still had his archives, and he found a script. And so that was good. He found a copy. He had a copy of the full script, typewritten copy. But then a couple months later, we actually tracked down that we realized that Jules had actually donated some of his archives to the Library of Congress about a dozen years ago. And so I had a buddy in D.C. go there, and he found the original handwritten copy of the screenplay on yellow legal pads. And that was, it still had like the dead lawyer's phone number in the margins. I mean, it was pretty, pretty fascinating just to get a hold of that. Then, of course, it took another year and a half just to make sure that Jules really had the rights to everything, which it turned out he did. But, we had to call Showtime and look through their archives, and Playboy and Village Voice and all these people. So, but anyway, and then, finally he was like, I'm 87. When are we making this thing already? I'm like, all right, well, now, I guess. So, anyway, so we did. So we made the film and we did a Kickstarter campaign. We raised money other ways. We found an amazing cast and shot the film and edited and been playing vessels, and then we got distribution for the film, and so it's coming out this weekend.
That's amazing. Talk a little bit, and I'm asking this on behalf of Frank, because I know this will break his heart a little bit, because you almost had one of his favorite actors, David Duchovny, in the movie, correct? Was he attached at one point?
I don't think he was ever attached. I think we may have made an offer to him.
Okay.
Sounds about right. Yeah, no, believe me, if he was attached, we wouldn't have let him go. But, you know, the thing about casting with these movies is that you're never going to get the sort of ideal cast. I mean, in our case, these characters are very similar to the characters in Carnal Knowledge. So the ideal cast was Jack Nicholson and Art Garfunkel, but, you know, from 40 years ago. So, but creatively, you don't want to have, like, the image of another actor in your head when it works. That you do get, because on an independent film, it's much more about scheduling and availability, you know. And so in the end, we got, and so we were looking at tall people, short people, all kinds of different people, and we wound up actually, ironically, getting these two amazing actors, David Koechner, who plays Huey, and Jim Rash, who plays Bernard, who actually look exactly like the cartoons themselves, which is kind of funny. So, of the two, Koechner came on board first, and of course most people know him from the Anchorman movies, you know, Champ Kind, the sportscaster, but he's been on The Office but also other independent films like Thank You for Smoking and Krampus and things like that. So he's got a great range, and he just really embraced the character and the writing style. And then we stumbled into Jim Rash, who, you know, who's an Oscar-winning screenwriter himself for co-writing The Dependent, the Alexander Payne film with George Clooney. But Rash, of course, a lot of people know him as Dean Pelton from Community. But no one had offered him a romantic lead in a movie in a while. So he was very excited to embrace the role.
You'd mentioned Mike Nichols and Carnal Knowledge being an influence on your previous film. As a filmmaker, when you think about your sensibilities as a director, I mean, who have you drawn influence upon? Was there ever like a moment in your life where like you saw a film and you're like, yes, that's it?
I was just thinking about this morning, Failsafe. Which I don't even remember who the director is, but it was just remade as a live TV thing, also with Clooney a couple of years ago. But it had Henry Fonda and
Walter Matthau,
Larry Hagman.
I have both versions actually. Yeah. I remember I have the CBS live special as well on DVD. Sidney Lumet did it, of course.
Yeah, of course.
I just looked it up. Yeah, of course he did it.
He's no slouch, right? So. Yeah, that was a film that I just saw it at a midnight screening on my own in college, and it was just a weird night. It just really stood out to me. But in general, I would say in terms of sensibilities, Robert Altman was a big influence on me. And then as it turned out, and Tim knows the story, my first movie was called Omaha the Movie when I was still it's a feature film. But I was still a student at USC, and we're both, Tim and I are both from Omaha, and I went back there and I said to the film commission, oh, I know a few actors, but I need to, a local producer, can you recommend anyone? And they said, oh yeah, there's this guy Dana, and he's producing commercials, but he wants to get into features. Oh, and by the way, he's Robert Altman's grandson. And I said, he's hired. and so that's how I met Dana Altman, who's still my producing partner and is one of our partners on Bernard and Huey. But we were very lucky enough that then Robert Altman kind of became our mentor, certainly on that first film we did together. So I was lucky enough to get to know him and actually observe him on set of Kansas City when he was shooting that. And that was good. That was great. I mean, I just loved kind of his way of working with actors and his and crew and then of course his comic sensibilities as well. And then Pfeiffer and I really kind of jived together. Like I think our comedic sensibilities were similar enough that that he trusted me with his material and I felt good directing the script. So.
I was going to say, there's one thing that I've noticed about filmmakers from Omaha. There's, you know, you and Alexander Payne, and it's that there's a real dedication, I think, to making more kind of throwback adult dramas. I remember reading a quote from Payne saying, if he had his druthers about him, he'd never have a gun in one of his movies. And I kind of get that, you know, from watching, obviously, Omaha, the movies, is a screwball comedy in a lot of ways. It doesn't have guns that I remember. It does have Iowan kickboxers.
There are some guns, but I don't think any of the guns go off.
Okay, that's good. But then, you know, Between Us, which is a very good drama, I would recommend people seek that out. I know it was streaming for a while on Netflix. That's where I watched it. But great cast, very nicely done. And Bernard and Huey here, which, as we kind of joked about, I think, when you were in town and we were showing it to crowds in Denver for the film festival, that, you know, it's a Carnal Knowledge light, that it's a kind of lighthearted version of that, but
it's the same similar characters but a much lighter tone.
Sure. And I was gonna say, you know, Dan, obviously there's a big moment in Hollywood going on with Me Too, and you're coming out with a movie about a couple of Guy Lotharios. On the surface of it, sounds like it could be a real minefield for you. But talk about the women. You know, it really could be, except for the fact that the female characters are marvelous in Bernard and Huey, and they are nobody's fool. Far from it, I would say. The men tend to be their fools quite a bit more often. But
And this goes back to the way Pfeiffer originally wrote it. I mean, these guys are schmucks, and the women are very smart and strong characters. And they, you know, because what happens in the kind of the story of the movie is that these two guys haven't seen each other in 25 years, and Huey shows up on Bernard's doorstep, and then in short order, Huey winds up seducing all the women in Bernard's life, or at least tries to, and then Bernard winds up in a relationship with Huey's daughter, a 25-year-old daughter, Zelda, played by the wonderful Mae Whitman. But she's really the one who kind of seduces Bernard. So the women are constantly getting the upper hand in these various relationships with these men, and I think, you know, part of that is in the script, is in the writing, but I think also we the casting, you know, I've talked to the actors, actresses that have played the women, and they all attribute it to the casting too, of course.
Of course they do.
They're fantastic. If people, you know, I mean, Mae Whitman is, if people have seen her in Parenthood, or she's on Good Girls now on NBC, or she was the lead in The Duff, or Perks of Being a Wallflower. I mean, she's nobody's fool. You know, she's terrific. And Sasha Alexander, who plays Bernard's girlfriend, Roz, she's from Shameless and Rizzoli and Isles. And she actually went to film school with me at USC years ago. So kind of had a backstory there. She's terrific, very smart actress. So she's actually Sophia Loren's daughter-in-law. And then we have Bellamy Young, who played the recent president on Scandal, Melly Grant. Bellamy's great. She plays Huey's ex-wife, Aggie. And then the wonderful Nancy Travis from So I Married an Axe Murderer and Last Man Standing and a bunch of other things. She's great in the film. So we have this these four amazing actresses. A few more too in the film, and they really give much, you know, they're really the ones in control of the situation, even though Bernard and Huey think they are. So I think it speaks to the fact that these kinds of characters and this kind of story is a timeless story. I mean, the Me Too movement and Time's Up didn't just happen out of nowhere. I mean, these, you know, men have been behaving badly for thousands of years, and, you know, things are maybe finally starting to catch up a little bit, but these kinds of relationships have been going on for years.
I just have a
can you Oh, go ahead, Frank.
I have a quick question. I know you said, you know, you've been trying to track Pfeiffer down forever, get a copy of this original screenplay, and you know the history of Bernard and Huey as characters. I mean, did it ever seem like a feel like a daunting task to you to put this up on screen, considering these characters had been around since, what, like you said, 1957?
1957, yeah. Yeah, it was daunting. I mean, especially for about the 3 years that we were looking for the script. I mean, there was a good chance that we either wouldn't find it, or when we would find it, that we wouldn't get the rights to it, or there'd be some, you know, reason why it was hung up somewhere. And I think my answer to that was, because people ask me, well, wow, that's a lot of effort to put into something, and maybe it won't go. But I was having just a fantastic time just getting to know Pfeiffer as a person, you know, through this whole process. Like, even if we'd never made the movie, it still would have been worth it. But yeah, I mean, but even once we started going, it's absolutely daunting. I mean, Pfeiffer's scripts have only been directed by four other directors, and it's Mike Nichols, Robert Altman, that's for Popeye, Alan Arkin directed one of the scripts, which was Little Murders, and then Alain René, the great French director, directed one of the films, and Mirvish. Like, how do I fit into that, you know, pantheon? So it's a pretty exclusive fraternity. Arkin and I are the only two left alive. And why and how Pfeiffer trusted me. I think he just never thought this thing was really going to happen. He was busy doing graphic novels and working on a play premiere. So he's like, sure, yeah, whatever, kid. You know, he really didn't think this thing was really going to be for real until we did our Kickstarter campaign. And I gave Jules, you know, a couple of the perks were a Bernard and Huey mug and a Bernard and Huey tote bag. And I showed him the tote bag. He's like, oh, my gosh, this thing has a zipper? This is for real. We're really making a movie here. And then he started to get a little nervous. But yeah, no, I was very nervous about it. And right after we shot the film, I went out to see him again and showed him some footage, and he was very happy with it. But he only actually saw the whole movie, I think, for the first time with it, certainly with an audience, but I think even by himself, just about 2 weeks ago. And we had a screening out in the Hamptons. And it was funny. Someone asked me right before the screening, oh, Dan, are you nervous? I said, I'm not nervous. I've seen the film before. Jules has seen the film before. And they said, oh, no, I just had lunch with Jules. He hasn't seen it yet. Go, oh, well, now I'm nervous. But as it turned out, he loved the film and really said some very, very generous things about it, the film, and about me and the cast and everyone. So that was a big relief. Because I think when he first saw Little Murders, he said he didn't talk to Alan Arkin for 40 years. So,
wow.
He said it grew on him eventually. But anyway, so I think I got off easy on this one.
That's good. Can you talk a little bit about the shoot? I know, obviously, you did some location shooting in New York, and then you used your garage back in L.A.
Right.
to great effect.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
Right, well... Yeah, so we did, I live in L.A., and so naturally it's when you have a New York-based film, you shoot most of it in L.A. You know, Hollywood's been doing that for 100 years, why should I be special? So we shot 14 days in L.A. Two of those days were these flashback scenes that we shot on Super 16 film, actual film. And then we went to New York just for 2 days to shoot some of the exteriors, down in the West Village mainly. And we just brought three of the actors with us for that one. We used my garage rather extensively. It's particularly in the flashback scenes. I mean, we didn't shoot the whole thing here. We just shot for one day at my house, in the garage. And I'm actually, that's where I'm speaking from right now. I use it for everything. In the flashbacks, you see Huey's apartment is in the garage, but also there's a scene and I don't want to spoil it too much, but it takes place on a subway in 1986 in New York. And so we shot it in my garage.
And pull it off brilliantly. I have to say, the kind of claustrophobic effect is really good. And knowing what we all know about how you shot it too, it's great how it came together.
Well, thanks very much. Yeah, no, it was fun, and it's, you know, and it's kind of the ethos of independent filmmaking. You know, we don't have a budget, but we have a great script, and we have a good cast, and you know, we have a good camera. So you just find a way to make it work. Just create some movie magic.
Mm-hmm. And you've written a little bit about doing that. You want to take this opportunity to plug your book for a minute?
Well, funny you should say that. Yes. I wrote a book a couple of years ago, actually sort of while I was in this whole pre-production process for the film. And the book is called The Cheerful Subversive's Guide to Independent Filmmaking. It's on Focal Press, which is part of Routledge, and which is a big publisher. And it was kind of a compilation of some of the articles that I'd written for Filmmaker Magazine and some other things, and a lot of new material, including a whole chapter on signing the script for Bernard and Huey. It's just kind of a how-to, literally, on how to make an independent film, whether it's a feature film or a short film or a YouTube video or something else, and everything from how do you get an amazing cast to how do you work with them on set to distribution to festivals, and even how to win an Oscar. So it really goes through it from soup to nuts. But I think, you know, a lot of people have said it's got, you know, it's very educational and helpful and has a lot of nuts and bolts advice, but it's also reasonably funny and accessible and digestible in small nuggets. So a number of film classes have actually started adopting it around the country, and I've been doing a lot of guest lectures as well. So
I believe it. I've read it, and I have to say your description is spot on. It's a funny read. You've got great anecdotes that you pepper throughout there, and just your general way with the language is funny. But it is also a very thorough walkthrough. I mean, like, for example, the early chapter on getting a lawyer, which I like. Your strategy for getting free advice from lawyers is to just corner them in bathrooms, you know, when their kind of defenses are down and not going to talk dollars.
Exactly.
With you.
And their pants. Yeah.
And their pants are down, you know, literally.
Right.
But, you know, that's a boring subject by anyone's, you know.
Right.
By anyone's measure, and you make it an entertaining read. So yeah, I highly recommend.
And
the
even my lawyer, even my lawyer appreciated that chapter.
And he does. Well, good. I'm sure you have a lawyer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great for young up and coming filmmakers. I think it's a wonderful read. So I recommend.
Thank you very much. That's very kind.
So Dan, is there anything else that the public should know about the movie before we let you go and before your big premiere weekend?
Well, I mean, I'll just say, you know, please see the movie. Please see Bernard and Huey. And for those of you lucky enough to live in one of the cities where it's playing, go see it on the big screen, because it does look really good. I mean, we had an amazing cinematographer, and it looks great and sounds great. But if you can't see it, and by the way, some of the cities where it's playing are New York at the Village East, in L.A. at Lemley's Monica, Denver at the
Northfield, I believe, yeah.
Northfield, yeah. But it's also in different places like Phoenix, Houston, Miami, Minneapolis, Cleveland, Washington, D.C., or Alexandria, just outside D.C., and San Francisco as well. And but then if you can't see it there, that's cool, because it's also going to be on iTunes and other VOD video on demand places. So demand to see it, and it will be seen. And Tim, by the way, it's also going to be playing in Omaha, not now, but on August 16th, and in Lincoln starting August 17th. So
fantastic.
So yeah, even though the video on demand part of it is already coming out, and the festivals kind of run through, it doesn't mean you have to stop showing the movie. I think there's still going to be lots of stuff. To see it in the coming months.
Excellent.
I just have one quick question for you, Dan, before you got a jet.
Sure.
And that's, in the age of digital media and VOD, how do you feel about that as a filmmaker with distribution and your film being seen across a plethora of mediums when it opens up?
Yeah, right. Now, it's a good question. I think that this is the main reason I'm a big advocate of going on the festival circuit with a film, is because I think you know, your distribution, first of all, I mean, we're lucky enough to get a theatrical release. I mean, a lot of films, most films really just wind up on VOD. And unfortunately, if you're just on video on demand, it's very hard to get the newspapers to review the film, you know, or magazines to give you press, or your own actors to do press for the film. Or do interviews, because they're like, oh, it's only on VOD. You know, it's sort of the old direct-to-video thing. So the fact that we're getting any kind of theatrical release is remarkable enough. But even then, it's only for about a week. I don't think it's going to hold that long. And honestly, it was me getting the theaters in Nebraska, you know, in Omaha and Lincoln beyond this 1 week. And bringing that to the distributor. But that's where I go back to the festival circuit. It is really the one place, even more than your theatrical release, where you can show the film to an audience, and usually a pretty packed audience. I mean, Tim, you know, when we screened it at the Denver Film Festival, I mean, those were pretty packed houses.
For sure.
And do a meaningful Q&A, and, you know, introduction, and talk to people afterwards, and get, you know, really quality feedback, and engage with your audience, you know, as well as meeting other filmmakers and doing some of the other things at festivals, which are great. But I think that is what's kind of unique. I once had this conversation with my friend Joe Carnahan, you know, the big, you know, Hollywood director doing, you know, the A-team movies, that open and close in 3,000 theaters, but in 1 week. And I said, you know, conceptually, would you rather have a film open in 3,000 theaters in 1 week, or spend a year traveling around the world with your film, you know, and then when it does open, it only opens in 10 cities. You know, it's an interesting philosophical discussion to have, you know, about which is sort of more meaningful. And a lot of it, you know, and I think, you know, I mean, a film at the end of the day, it's like a tree falling in the forest. I mean, it's just light and shadows. You know, if nobody sees it, how do you know it exists? And likewise, on iTunes or video on demand, or even once it gets to Netflix, if nobody knows that it's there, how do you know that it even got seen or was there, or what the reaction was? So that's why I think the theatrical experience, even if it's at the festival level, not in traditional distribution, it is kind of a unique experience, and I think for a filmmaker, it can't be beat.
Great. Any sense. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting times to be a filmmaker, no doubt.
It is, yeah. Well, that's why I'm just very grateful that I'm not a filmmaker. I'm a films maker. You know, this is my fourth or fifth one under my belt. So, you know, at some point, people realize you have a body of work, and at some point, you can call it a career. So, I don't know if I'm there yet, but I'm getting there.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of which, one last question for me: what is next? What do you have any other projects on your radar?
Well, funnily enough, 2 weeks ago when we screened the film out in the Hamptons for Jules and an audience out there, you know, he loved the film, and then we were out at dinner afterwards, and he said, oh yeah, so you did a great job with Bernard and Huey. You want the other screenplays now? I said, what other screenplay? He said, oh yeah, I got a whole bunch of them. And a play. I've got a Tony-nominated play. Do you want that one? So we've actually been, and then of course the hunt starts all over again. I was like, well, do you have these? Oh, no, I don't have them. They're in stores. I don't know where they are. So I actually sent my buddy in D.C. back to the Library of Congress just this week. And we found about six more screenplays. So, you know, I don't know if those are going to be the next thing. I've also started writing a screenplay that's actually, we're going to shoot near where Pfeiffer lives, because I found this great location on some of the trips out there. So I'm pretty familiar with Hamptons now. And it turns out a buddy of mine owns a hotel there, and he and I have been talking about a script, and we've written several drafts of that. So that could be the next one. But we have to shoot that in the winter, so it probably won't be next winter because it's a little too soon, so maybe the winter after. But in the meantime, we've started to look through these old Pfeiffer scripts, and, you know, I mean, he would be thrilled to have me do another one.
So, that's excellent. Good.
Why not? Yeah.
So Bernard and Huey 2 coming to a theater near you in 2024.
Something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Or Carnal Knowledge 3, if that's
Carnal Knowledge 3.
I would see that at a midnight showing.
Absolutely.
Carnal Knowledge exactly. 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to get your hands on one of those and be like, Jules, I know it has nothing to do with the original, but can I just call it Carnal Knowledge 2 for marketing right. purposes? Exactly. You know, maybe you'll agree to it. Give it a shot.
Well, you know, strangely enough, Bernard and Huey, when that producer was trying to make it 30 years ago, he kept pitching it as the sequel to Carnal Knowledge. And,
well, sure.
and they didn't have any luck with that. And I think because they are really different. And and so I think the fact that we have not been pitching it that way and this much time has passed have both helped us out. So.
Very good. Well, Dan Mervish, thank you so much for coming back to Podcasting.
Sure, my pleasure, guys. Yeah.
Hope you have an amazing weekend. I want to note that as of right now, Bernard and Huey is 100% certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
I was just going to mention Woo-hoo! That. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So this movie's cooking with gas, as they say. So
right. We only have downhill from here. So.
There you go. There you go. Well, and I hope that you'll come back and talk to us some more once some of these other projects get going too, because we'd love to hear about them.
Of course. All right, guys. Thank you very much, and appreciate all the help.
Thank you very much, Dan. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, and thank you, everyone, for listening.